Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
This is the GM Shuffle.
And everybody thinks that, you know, this is all Josh McDaniels. I'll say this. I think there was a lot of people in that organization before Josh McDaniels ever showed up that had the same sentiment.
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. As always, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer, Elliot Bowman, back with us from the holiday weekend on the ones and twos, as always. And Michael, we have a lot to get to, a lot of news and notes. I know that you have a take on who the starting quarterback will be for the Tennessee Titans tonight. You don't think it's going to be Malik Willis. We'll get into that coming up in the next segment when we preview Thursday Night Football between the Cowboys and the Titans. But first, Michael, we got to start with the news out here in Las Vegas. This was circulating early in the morning. I even texted you wondering, hey, what the heck is happening with the betting market here? The line was the Niners, 6-point favorites. I see it tick up to 7. I'm like, all right, maybe the Niners, you know, there's some sentiment there that people like them a lot. Then it goes to 7.5 and 8, and I'm like, okay, something's going on. Something's afoot. I texted you, and I simply said, is Derek Carr being benched on Sunday? You responded, yes. Your thoughts and reaction to the news that we saw yesterday with Carr now going to the bench. Jarrett Stidham will be the quarterback for the Silver and Black this weekend.
Well, I mean, look, if you've watched the Raider games and have paid attention to them, and certainly a lot of people have, and how close they've been to winning games, and there's been two or three plays, usually in the fourth quarter on a final drive, that just doesn't happen. And I think the tipping point occurred last week in Pittsburgh, where, you know, there were a couple times they had a chance to make plays, and for whatever reason, you know, Derek hasn't really responded to this offense. I mean, he's 30th, Femi, in the National Football League in completed passes in terms of outcome, right? I think there's an algorithm that they go by. Like, if the ball was thrown, the ball should be complete. The guy's open, the ball should be completed. Mm-hmm. He's 30th in that category. His completion percentage is significantly lower this year than it's been pretty much in a career. He's a 65% completion percentage guy. This year he's at 60%. I mean, and the other thing is when you go through and look at Davante Adams, last year with Aaron Rodgers, he was at 72% catch percentage. This year with Carr, he's at 55%. So if you watched all the Raider games, you saw time and time again that there were guys open, there were opportunities to make plays that Derek didn't really deliver. Now, Derek doesn't deserve all the blame, but after, you know, 142 career starts and a 63-79 record, you know, at some point you either say we got to get better or this isn't going to work. And the decision that they basically entered this contract year, prove a contract. They said, okay, Derek, here's the deal. You know, we want you to be our quarterback. We're not trying to look for another quarterback, you know, so we're going to give you this year to learn the system, to kind of find out where we are, you know, to see how you adapt to this new kind of way we're doing things. And then, you know, and we'll have a contract so that if you do play to a high level, everything kicks in and you're compensated at that level. And he didn't, in the opinion of Josh McDaniels and the brass at the Dave Ziegler there, he didn't do it. And if you watch the tape, it's hard to argue that he played well this year.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to argue that. Like you mentioned, the Raiders losing so many close games, and this decision, like you mentioned, was a financial one. Carr, if he was unable to pass a physical in March to start the new league year, he had $40.4 million guaranteed. Now, that is probably what is the main driver of why they made this decision, because they wanted to protect him. They don't want him to get hurt in these final 2 weeks of the season. But it is a little bit surprising on the timing of it, Michael, I thought at least, because the Raiders are still technically alive for the playoffs. Now, they need quite a bit to happen to get to the postseason, one of which is winning out, but they need five other things to actually happen as long as they win out as well. Dolphins losing out, Jets losing to the Seahawks, but beating the Dolphins, the New England Patriots beating the Dolphins but losing to the Bills, Pittsburgh losing one of their games, and also the Titans beating the Cowboys and losing to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that's a lot of things that they would have to happen, and I'm sure they're assessing it saying, hey, chances of that happening is pretty much slim to none. But were you a little surprised that they'd made this decision before they were officially eliminated?
Not really, because I think there's been a lot of frustration over the season. Now, look, I know my son's the offensive coordinator, and people are saying, well, you're going to defend your son. That's not the case here. Look, I think to me, Carr, when they entered there, I had Carr as a redshirt player in the top 10. But as we've often said on this podcast, if we see it, we have to say it. And I would be – you could sit there and watch tape on it. You know, all these guys on Twitter that claim they watch tape, like your boy Dan Orlovsky, is that how you say his last name?
Orlovsky.
You know? Orlovsky. Okay. You know, he's an expert all of a sudden on quarterbacking play, right? You know, he is – even though – and he wants to become a coach. Well, I would suggest he watches some of the tape, because he tweets out there that the Raiders had a 32nd-ranked defense, and he's never been on a defense that has been 20th in the league on defense. Someone next year is going to get a top 12 player. Like, if you're watching the tape, if you're watching this tape, you can't really say that. You could say, I think the system doesn't fit, and maybe that's the case, right? Mm-hmm. If you're watching the tape and you see Darren Waller wide open on an in-cut, and he throws the ball to Mike Tomlin on the outside, you got to wonder what's going on. When you watch the tape and you see Davante Adams is the number one receiver in the route and he throws the ball a pop fly down the middle so the Rams can intercept it, you got to wonder what's on the tape, right? Mm-hmm. You got Hunter Renfrow screaming down the middle of the field on the last play and he throws it a little bit outside for the interception. Are you watching the tape? Like, this is the problem with sport. We have all these talking heads that don't watch the tape. I did a show the other day. Rob Parker comes on, and you know, he wants to blame Josh McDaniels because Josh McDaniels was a shitty coach in Denver. Okay, well, it's a long time from Denver. Like, don't you think people change? Don't you? I said, Rob, don't you think you've become a better reporter since you were at the Detroit Free Press? Like, after 10 years, like, okay, like, things change. And I'm not saying the Raiders coaching staff shouldn't have some of the blame. They should. They haven't coached well. They've made some mistakes. There's no denying that. You know, but when you're paying somebody $40 million and you call a play where the inside receiver is getting the ball and you throw it to Mike Tomlin on the most critical play of the game, what are we doing here? Like, what are we doing? Like, if you watch the tape, if this guy watched the tape instead of putting shit out there that makes no sense at all, you know, then he would come back and say, look, I don't agree with the decision. I think Carr's poorly coached. I think he's made mistakes. I get all that. He's entitled to that opinion. But don't go sitting there saying it's because the defense sucks why Carr isn't playing well. Like, that makes no sense at all. Like, how about Dan Marino? How about his defense?
Yeah, Marino won a lot of games despite...
How do you defend this? I mean, they all get on they get on there and they start talking about it, and it's never, you know, how many coaches have been there? I know he's had a bunch of coaches. I understand that, right? Mm-hmm. But look at his career record, Femi. I mean, you watch all the Raider games. Look at his career record.
I mean,
he's 63-70-9. I mean, he's been to the playoffs twice. Oh, by the way, he's had two winning seasons in the NFL. Two. And everybody thinks that, you know, this is all Josh McDaniels. I'll say this. I think there was a lot of people in that organization before Josh McDaniels ever showed up that had the same sentiment. Now, I don't think they had the guts to pull the trigger on it yet. Mm-hmm. I don't think they went down that Brady road because they thought that Carr was the answer. Like, how's that working out? Like, how does somebody just, like, everybody thinks this has been premeditated because of the arrival of Josh McDaniels, and they just want to dump all over Josh, right? Like, Josh is to prove himself to be a good coach. I'm not here to shill for him. But, like, all of a sudden, he's now, it's his fault. They were going after Brady. Gruden didn't have the courage to make the move, even though Gruden knew he needed to make the move. And everybody says, well, Mark Davis loves him. Does he? Does people know that? I mean, we have people on our network that claim that Mark Davis loves the quarterback and he loves, like, when they say that, they have no clue what they're talking about.
I mean, you can fast forward all the way back to, or rewind, I'm sorry, all the way back to when we did the blue chip, red chip episode of the quarterbacks, and Carr was the guy that I was questioning. I was like, hey, are we sure about this red chip because you mentioned it, the wins are not there. And he's one of those quarterbacks that leaves you wanting more. You can see on the tape where sometimes he makes those big-time throws, and it's like, okay, that's the guy that we're all talking about. That's what we want to see from a franchise quarterback. But then he has way too many of the brain farts and the duds that you outlined here in this discussion to where he's just not someone that's consistent enough at the position if you want to win long-term, in my opinion. Now, another domino with this decision by the Raiders is that Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network reported that a part of the discussions that took place over the last few days, both sides came away with the conclusion that Derek Carr should step away from the team for the final two games, avoid a, quote, obvious distraction. This is not going to be injury-related or anything like that. He's just going to be NIR and not practice with the team, as it sounds like this is over for Derek Carr in the silver and black. For him to step away from the team, I mean, we've seen Matt Ryan get benched multiple times this season. Matt Ryan's still there with the team, even though he's inactive on game day. Is this just maybe the two sides decided that, hey, Carr's probably pissed off that he gets benched, and they just don't want him around to create any sort of negative energy? Is that kind of where we're, what we can pick up from that report?
You know, I don't know, but here's what I do know. The one thing I've learned in my long career in the National Football League, and I got taught this by Ray Rhodes my first year in the NFL, the locker room knows. Like, all the rhetoric that's told in the paper is never the rhetoric in the locker room. Like, you can't fool the locker room. You can't fool the players, Femi. The players' locker room, they know. They watch the same tape, right?
Yep.
And you can't hold somebody to a standard of excellence and then somebody not to a standard of excellence. That's how you create a non-alignment. That's what's going on in Denver. And so, to me, I think the players know. Now, is Jarrett Stidham the answer? I don't know that. I don't think so, but I don't know that. Right? I think the Raiders know they need a quarterback. I think they know they need one for the future. I think there was a sense when they went there, they knew they needed one, but they were going to let this thing play out to see if, in fact, he could prove that the numbers he had last year, throwing for as many yards and the way he played last year, could translate over. And maybe the system isn't the right system for him, but gosh be darned, there's so many plays on the tape that if you study the tape and watch the tape like these guys claim they do, that they put all these clips up on Twitter to prove to people they're watching tape, right? Even though when they describe what they're seeing, it's completely inaccurate, right? It's almost comical, right? They can't even get the coverage right. And so when they do that, they got to make sure of it. Like, the players know. That's what makes this so interesting. So I think by him leaving, I don't think it's part of being around the team. They're not going to put him back in a game, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to put him back in the game. They're going to, and to humiliate him to be the third inactive quarterback, I don't think is fair to him either. And so once they made this decision, it's probably just best for him to stay home and move forward. Look, he's a great kid. There's nothing wrong. As a person, he's a tremendous person.
Yeah.
We're talking about him as a performance level this season. And I speak for myself. I don't speak for anybody else but myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's how you have to look at it. This is a hard – look, these decisions are not easy. They're not easy because you're going to get ridiculed in the paper. You're going to have all these talking heads tell you what an idiot you are, that they've never watched the tape, and you have.
What's next for Carr?
I mean, he's the third day of the league year. Do they think they could trade him? I mean, he has a no-trade clause in his contract. I mean, look, there's going to be quarterbacks that people are going to want him. They're going to see him. Now, here's the thing about Carr. There's a lot of coaches that have coached him. So, you know, that network is going to – the back channel network of what's wrong with Carr. I mean, that's going to be the – like, hey, tell me what's the real deal with this guy. I think most people in the league know what the deal is with Carr. I think most people in the league do know what the deal is with Carr. And so he'll go to another team, and if I were him, I'd go to a team that had a really good offensive line that could protect him and kind of has had a feature run game and try to manage it the best way you could. But at some point when the play breaks down, if you just put together a reel of all the times Carr has to leave the pocket or escape or try to make a play outside of the element of where the system is, it's not good. The second play within the play for Carr never has been very good. Going back to when Gruden was there, Gruden used to complain about it all the time. He doesn't make any plays off of a broken down play like Mahomes does.
The out of structure stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's going to take that, and whether he makes $40 million a year, it'll be interesting to see more. Not that what team's interested is what's the value of him. What are you willing to spend on that? See, Wentz was a valuable because his contract wasn't that much. If Carr's in this current contract at 30-some million, you know, does the team take a chance on him? Does the Houston Texans take? I don't know. But I think it's going to be not as simple as you think.
I'm sure people are already saying the Indianapolis Colts because they've kicked down the road of veteran quarterbacks in the past. Maybe the New York Jets, who have outperformed their expectations, are not going to have that great of a draft pick in terms of being able to draft one of these young quarterbacks that's going to be in this 2023 draft class. So there could be a number of teams that maybe kick the tires and try to find out what's under the hood there with Derek Carr. But you mentioned what's the deal. I think you outlined what the deal is some of the pocket stuff when things break down. Teams and coaches know that his play drops off precipitously when you have that pressure around him. So
yeah, and he's not comfortable. I mean, once he gets hit, look, the one thing I thought that Gruden did a really good job with, and you know, I'm hard on Gruden, right? You know, I've been hard on Gruden. Yeah. But I think, you know, I'm hard on Gruden as a head coach. As a quarterback coach and a play caller, I think Gruden's good in that area. However, that being said, I thought what Gruden did a really good job when Gruden went there. When Gruden first got there, you know, Carr was averaging like under 7 yards per attempt. Mm-hmm. And why is that? Because a lot of people, including me, felt that when Carr was there, his eye level was down. Okay, so he took the check down immediately. Instead of holding the ball to that last split second, he didn't. When Gruden got there, he was much better in that area, right? Now, the first year Gruden was there was 17. He was at 6.8. The next year, Gruden got him up to 7.3. And then he got him almost to 8. Mm-hmm. He was getting the ball down the field. And this year, he's back down to 7 again. You know what's fascinating about Carr? When I watch Carr play this year, I thought he was way better last year. Way better, okay? This year, his QBR rating is 56.2. Last year, his QBR rating is 52.4. How is that possible? Like, why would I ever go to the QBR ever again? Like, why would I ever look at that ever again? Like, you're telling me he's having a better year this year by QBR than he did last year? That's not even close. Last year, he threw for 4,800 yards. You know, he averaged 7.7 yards per attempt. And people say, well, why was that? I think a lot of last year was there was no pressure on it. There was no expectation. I mean, go back to the Cincinnati game. When he spikes the ball on the first and 10, it doesn't have to.
Yeah, that's... And according to the QBR, his two best years were under Gruden in 2018 and 2019, it looks like here. So,
2018, he's 4-12. 2020, he's 8-8. 2019, he's 7-9. At some point, your record is got to be justified. I mean, he has a worse record than Archie Manning did when he played at the Saints.
That's not good there. We'll see what happens with Derek Carr this offseason. We'll see where the Raiders go at the quarterback position this offseason as well. But let's stay in the AFC West here, Michael, because right after we taped the podcast and posted it and shared it out to the world, we thank all of our listeners and viewers for chiming in and listening and taking in the content. The Denver Broncos decided that, hey, this is a great time to go ahead and fire Nathaniel Hackett. So the Broncos fired Hackett on Monday morning, and now the interim head coach will be Jerry Rosberg, who was the special analyst to help out Nathaniel Hackett with the in-game decisions and all that stuff. But before we get into what was said at the press conference by the Denver ownership group and general manager George Payton, do you think that this was the time to fire Hackett? Like, was there no other option here for the Broncos, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, look, they laid a complete egg. We talked about it on national television. They laid that egg. And once you lay an egg like that on national TV and the team played with no energy, no intensity, you felt like it had to happen. I thought it was after the Carolina game. I said on the pod, you know, and that was, what, week 12 of the season? Yep. I thought they played with no energy. They were disconnected, you know. And then the next week they went back to Baltimore and they played a closer game, but they still, you know, but – to me, the meltdown on defense last week, you know, making Baker Mayfield look like the second coming of Dan Marino, you know, not even throwing incomplete passes. I think it showed the organization that the team has tuned him out. And once the team has completely tuned you out and you know you're making a change, you're better off spending the next 2 weeks collecting data than you are trying to pretend that you're all in, you know. And so, you know, you put this guy, I thought – They were smart. I thought the defensive coordinator was smart to not take the job because, it, you know, there's no win in that. Let him interview for it. Let him run his defense. Let him do what he wants to do. I think he was smart not to. Now, remember, most of the staff is all controlled by one agent, Richmond Flowers, the former player. You know, he's got all these coaches on the staff. So, you know, it's a lot of maneuvering going on in there. And they fired two coaches, too. They fired the special teams coach and the offensive line coach. Two of the most critical hires Hackett can make is the line coach and the special teams coach. And they fired both of them before the end of the year.
It's been a disaster of a situation for the Broncos, hiring Nathaniel Hackett, and then you trade for Russell Wilson, you give all those picks to Seattle, then you give the big extension to Russell Wilson, and he's played like a bottom three quarterback all season long. I mean, about as bad of an offseason and a regular season as you can have for one team. But you were really interested in what the CEO and the owner of the Denver Broncos had to say, Greg Penner. Here's what he said when he was asked about what type of coach he's looking for to replace Nathaniel Hackett.
I've worked with a lot of great CEOs, and it starts with really strong leadership. I think that's going to be the most critical factor here in a head coach. Obviously, the X and O's are important, but we need a strong leader for this organization that's focused on winning. That starts with culture. It's instilling a sense of accountability, discipline, and we need an identity on offense. But at the starting point, it's got to be about culture and leadership, and those characteristics are what we'll be focused on the most.
Michael, what do you think of that?
I love it. I mean, it's the first time I've ever heard an owner even talk about it. He talked about alignment. He talked about accountability. He talked about leadership. He didn't talk about whose offense can we hire. He didn't talk about let's hire Nathaniel Hackett because he might be able to get us Aaron Rodgers. He didn't talk about subcontracting. He talked about hiring a leader. Now, to me, the challenge he has is who's he going to hire? How many of those guys fit that qualification? Mm-hmm. How many guys are true leaders? How many guys have been trained to become a true leader, a true CEO of a company? You know, how many guys think on a global level, on a macro level, to rebuild this franchise? You know, they also said that George Payton's not going to be running everything, that Payton's going to report to him, and the head coach is going to kind of be the CEO, which I think is really smart. But he's got to find the right guy. He's almost going to have to look in college because there's very few guys in the NFL that could meet that criteria that he just set forward because they're not used to running programs, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's used to running a program. You could say, well, hire a guy who's been a former head coach. Well, he's not used to running that program. He's, you know, the guys who got Pat Shurmur, he's been a head coach twice, but he's been really an offensive coordinator that they made a head coach. So that doesn't fit the bill. And it's going to be interesting how the agents get to Penner to kind of position their guy as a CEO, because all these guys that are going to come in for an interview are going to come in with their profile. They're going to say, well, here's what I'm going to run on offense, and here's the list of guys I'm going to hire to fill in the blanks on the staff. Mm-hmm. Whereas if the true CEO walks in and says, okay, here's my vision. Here's the way I want this to team. Here's the way the team's going to look. Here's what we're going to be on offense. Here's how we're going to be accountable. Here's how we're going to handle the team. And I'm going to find coaches that fit this profile, and I'm going to coach the coaches. How many people you think on planet Earth can do that?
Not a whole lot. The ones that can already have jobs.
Typically. So you're going to have to find a young college coach that you feel like you can nurture and bring in. And then you got to have somebody help coach the coaches. Because what he's saying right there is the problem with Nathaniel was, everything became scheme-oriented. Well, it's got to be plays. And then you got to find somebody who's going to come in who's tough, who's going to walk into Russell and say, Russell, I need to have a meeting with you. Because what Shannon Sharp said is true. Russell has always positioned himself as an entitled player. That's one of the things that killed him in Seattle with his teammates. That's why all those teammates were there rooting against him. Because he put himself above the team. He did the same thing in Denver. You know, he's got 12 bathrooms in a house of all this stuff that he's promoting, right? You know, I love it. People say he's got 12 bathrooms. He has 12 touchdown passes, you know? So if he gets another touchdown pass, he's got to build another bathroom in the house, you know? Like, I get it. Like, you can't have 5 parking spots at the stadium. Like, see, to me, that's Peyton's problem. He allowed that to happen. Like, when you sign a player and you make a trade like that, you got to de-recruit him. You got to say, hey, you got to become humble, and you got to get with your teammates. They're not going to respect you if you're going to act entitled. They're really not going to respect you if you act entitled and you don't play good. They'll put up with you if you act entitled and you're great.
They did that in Seattle. But once you start to decline, they ain't going to put up with you. And that's pretty clear. So the next guy that walks into Denver's got to walk into Russ's office in the facility and say, Russ, we're going to take this office from you. And those five parking spots that you got at the stadium, you can forget about that too. Here's how this shit's going to go. Here's how we're going to do this. You're a player. You play. You got a lot of money coming to you. You get no benefits. Until you start playing, everybody's going to get treated the same. And when you play shitty, we're going to tell everybody you play shitty.
And a lot of people have made the comment that, hey, this is such a bad job because of Russell Wilson's contract, because of the lack of the draft picks, because that's what they had to use to get Russell Wilson. But I kind of push back on that because there's only 32 of these jobs, so it can't be a bad job. Like you eventually got to coach somebody if you want to become a head coach. Who do you think that they could target? I mean, Sean Payton's a name that's been floated around. There's no real buzz about whether Sean Payton's interested in Denver, but he's one of those guys that could be a CEO and has done it, has won a Super Bowl, has won a lot of games as a head coach. Do you think that this job could attract someone of that stature, or do they have to go, like you said, the college route or somebody that's a little lesser known in the NFL ranks?
I think you got to find somebody that meets the criteria, right? At least one thing I would say which makes this job attractive is the owner gets it. See, what makes jobs great in the NFL has nothing to do with who's on the roster. It has everything to do with the owner. I think one of the reasons why, you know, the owners make the difference. This guy, what he just declared is what he's looking for, will make a difference. Because if you come in and show him that you have command, you're holding people accountable, you run a disciplined program, he's not expecting you to win the Super Bowl in year one. Mm-hmm. You know, what you got to find is who's the young Bill Parcells out there. Because remember, when George Young hires Bill Parcells, he's the defense coordinator, he's the linebacker coach at the Giants. Right? He'd been a head coach once in his life at the Air Force Academy, and that didn't work out. Right? And so, like, how do you find that guy? You got to find somebody who's been trained how to do that. You got to find somebody who understands, hey, I'm gonna run. I'm not running the offense. I'm not running the defense. I'm running the team. And I'm going to hire somebody specifically to run an offense that I feel like fits our skill set. You know, I mean, that's what it's going to take. Is that Dan Quinn? Would that be Dan Quinn? Well, Dan Quinn's always turned the offense over to somebody. Mm-hmm. So now Dan Quinn's got to position himself a little differently. Like I'm going to come in, I'm going to hold people. You know, Dan's a happy guy. He does, you know, it's that Pete Carroll thing.
Yeah.
You know? But Dan, the second time, might be different. So you got to, you know, what's he going to be like? Is he going to hold him accountable? I mean, George Payton believed that, you know, he needed somebody to run it off. He's from that old, this. What Penner's saying is completely the opposite of how people hire in the NFL.
Yep.
And so it's going to be a challenge. Like, for me, I know Don Martindale. Like, I've had more than 15,000 conversations with Martindale. Martindale is a Bill. He's not Rex Ryan. He's Bill Parcells. That's who he is. He sees the game from a different level. You know, and so for me, because he was around Al, he got that ingrained into his system to see the game from a bigger level. But the problem is we're losing all these people that saw the game from a bigger level. We've done nothing to train them. And so we end up with these, as I keep saying, we end up with subcontractors. We don't have it. We never end up with a chief figure out officer at the head coaching position. So, like, but I'm sure they're out there. Like, you just got to dig. You got to figure it out. Is D'Amico Ryans that guy? Okay. I don't know. I know he could run a defense, but can he lead an organization? Right? I mean, that's the difference. You got to be able to figure out, you know, it's like, can he lead the organization? And I just read a quote this morning. I was listening, was reading a book, and it was kind of a, the problem with the NFL is they try to pair innovation and ingenuity together, right? Mm. And so, like, how does that work? Like, we keep looking for innovation. We keep looking for that one guy who runs an offense who's going to come in here and run an offense instead of looking for the guy who is going to lead the team and is going to set the pillars of success within the framework of the team. This is who we are. Like, if I go interview with Greg Penner, I would walk in and say, Greg, here's who we're going to be on offense. We're going to be physical. We're going to control the middle of the field. We're going to play in bad weather. We're going to run the football. We're going to make big. We're going to make explosive plays down the field. Whatever. And we're going to be. We're basically going to be this. And go from there.
I think it's perfect that you laid it out that way with some of these guys who are the scheme guys. It's almost like you're too close to the trees that you miss the whole forest type of thing. Like you don't see the 22,000 foot view, and that's what makes a really good head coach. And it's what we saw with Brian Daboll with the New York Giants. Everybody was raving about his play calling in Buffalo, and he says, you know what? I'm not calling the plays here because I'm the head coach. I'm going to bring in somebody to call the offense that I want run, and then we're going to also bring in a defensive coach, and we're going to try to go about it that way. And the Giants have had a lot of success in year one under Brian Daboll. All right, Michael, let's take our first break. On the other side, we'll get to Dan Quinn and that Dallas Cowboys defense as they take on the Tennessee Titans on Thursday Night Football. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. I mean, we have a plethora of games to bet on. You can bet on game by game, totals, sides, series props, conference finals, MVP, NBA finals, MVP, whatever you want. DraftKings has it. So all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. All right, Michael, let's get to Thursday Night Football. Not the prettiest game here on the card. Dallas Cowboys in Nashville, man. At our show sponsor DraftKings, Michael, get this. The Cowboys, 13-point favorites with a total of 40.
Why?
But we talked about it, though, at the top of the show. You said that you don't think that this is going to be Malik Willis that we see tonight
no
in primetime. Who's going to start behind center for the Titans?
It's got to be Joshua Dobbs. I said it on the show yesterday with Ben Wilson on the show yesterday. It's got to be Joshua Dobbs because he can't go into Jacksonville with Willis. Willis is terrible. Now, he may be terrible forever, or he just may be terrible as a rookie. I mean, the guy took an intentional grounding on a throwaway play. Think about that. On a free play. How do you do that? How do you do that? He took an intentional grounding on a throwaway, on an offside. He had a play. There's no chance he's going into Jacksonville in winner take all with Malik Willis. So this is a preseason game. I know it's going to piss Al Michaels off, but maybe mm-hmm. they cater Toscanos into the booth. That would help, you know? But this is bad. I mean, this is a preseason game tonight. That's why this line's going berserk towards Dallas, because Dallas may not treat it like that. Although I bet you we'll get some Cooper Rush tonight. I'll bet you. I mean, if I'm Dallas, I'm not playing Pollard. Like, I think I could beat Tennessee's not playing half their guys anyway. It's a preseason game. They're gearing up for the next game, but they need to get Dobbs reps. They need to get him going. Mm. They need to get him some reps within the system, you know, so that next week he can build off of what he does well, what he doesn't. It has to be Dobbs. It has to be. They're playing for next week.
They definitely are playing for next week because the Titans, they cannot get the 7 seed in the AFC. It is AFC South champions or you miss the playoffs. And just to outline what Michael's talking about with all the guys who are out for Tennessee, here's a list of the notable players who will be missing this game. Ryan Tannehill, of course, dealing with the ankle injury. We don't expect him back the rest of the way this season. Jeffrey Simmons, probably the best player on the team. Amani Hooker, one of their safeties, Bud Dupree, Zach Cunningham, David Long Jr. is already on IR, and then doubtful, and we don't expect these guys to play either, Derrick Henry, Christian Fulton, the cornerback, and then Denico Autry, the linebacker. Like, these are all their best players outside of maybe Treylon Burks, the first-round wide receiver that's the rookie. I don't know what the hell they're going to put on the field there in Tennessee, but maybe it's a chance to just get Josh Dobbs some reps here in this game. But, man, who knows what?
I mean, we're going to see the players they played in the preseason. I mean, we're going to see, you know, we're going to see my man from Saint Mike. What the hell is that? Sacred Heart. Julius Chestnut, who had a hell of a preseason for him. He got cut. They brought him back. We'll see Haskins. I mean, you know, they'll play their offensive line because their offensive line isn't good enough anyway. They got to play them, right?
They're also
those
hurt.
Guys got to get as many reps as they can get, right? They can't play Henry. There's no way you could play Henry and risk him. You got to get him healthy to go. Give him 10 days off. I mean, the secondary is a disaster. I wouldn't play Byard. I wouldn't play him either. I'd save him. I mean, I would just put it, you know, what's the deal? Put Josh Thompson in there or put Andrew Adams. I don't care who you put in there. Like, we're playing for next week. Yep. We can't function. There's no chance. It doesn't even matter if we win this game. I know it's going to make Al upset, and it's going to be the, you know, but that's the reality of the NFL.
Maybe they'll cater some Hattie B's hot chicken or something out there in Nashville. They'll get something nice.
Oh, no, Al's going to want Toscano's.
He's gonna want Toscano's.
It's funny. I told a buddy of mine to go to Toscano's out in L.A., and he went there, and Al was there. He's like, he didn't believe me that Al was going to be there. Like, yeah, Al's there.
That's his hangout spot?
I mean, it's right there. Yeah, it's always there. It's his spot.
For the Cowboys, Leighton Vander Esch is out once again with the neck injury. You mentioned Tony Pollard. He didn't practice at all this week. He did make the trip to Nashville, but my guess is that he's not going to play. It'd be stupid for the Cowboys to play him. Micah Parsons is also questionable, dealing with a hand injury. He was limited on Tuesday and Wednesday at practice, but you'd think that he's probably going to be on a pitch count because this game for Dallas, it's meaningful in the sense that, okay, they're still alive for the division, but they need a Philadelphia Eagles absolute collapse the final 2 weeks of the season. So I'm sure Dallas will be a little bit cautious on their end as well as they try to gear up for the playoffs.
They should be. I mean, look, they know they're going to play the South winner, and that's probably because of Tampa, is it Carolina, is it New Orleans? I mean, we're going to find out. If Carolina wins this week, it could be them. They still have to beat New Orleans. But if Tampa wins, they know they're playing Tampa. So, you know, that they got to just get ready for that. They lost to Tampa 19-3 in the opener. You know, Dak got hurt in that game. Remember that? That's a long time. That's long ago and far away, that game. It seems like years ago, right?
Yeah, we thought the Cowboys were screwed after that game. that was a while ago. Thankfully, they turned things around. What do you think of the final score is in this game? You think this is like, what, 24-3 or something like that? Like, what's the final score?
Well, I mean, I think that Dallas probably takes guys out too. You know, I think this is a true preseason game. So I think the under is going to be in play.
Yeah.
I think it could be 20-7 or 23-10, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I would – I don't know if that's a lot of points to give up. Because I don't see Dallas's motivation. Now, if Dallas gets up – if they come out there and get up 20, you know, they score. Because they – look, Dallas's strength with Prescott and the receivers against this team with no rush and no corners is not a good – they can get off to a 14-point lead. I bet the first quarter – whatever that line is, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's a way to go about this with the Cowboys. They're laying a field goal in the first quarter right now.
Oh, so. I'm all over that. I would be all over that. I mean, you know, because it's going to be hard for Dobbs to get himself going. Yeah, I mean, I'd be all over that.
Yeah.
It's a preseason game. And the longer the game goes, the more of a preseason game it becomes. It's a preseason game for the Titans. It's maybe not one for the Cowboys initially, but eventually it will be.
Well, hopefully they come out focused and stay healthy because it would be a bummer if somebody significant were to be lost to an injury in a game that probably doesn't mean a whole lot when you look at the playoff picture. All right, Michael, let's take another break. We'll get back to the other news and notes from around the league. This is the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. All right, Michael, let's get to some other news and notes from the NFL. A busy week with a lot of the news here as we're in the second to last week of the season. Unfortunately for the Miami Dolphins, they will once again be without their quarterback. Tua Tagovailoa is in the concussion protocol after suffering a concussion against the Green Bay Packers on Christmas afternoon. It will once again be Teddy Bridgewater as they face the New England Patriots. This Dolphins team have lost four straight. Their season on the ropes now, but I mean, with the Tua situation, it's a bummer. I mean, we've talked a lot about Tua and his play, and has been jovial, kind of just going back and forth, tongue in cheek stuff. But I mean, the amount of concussions that we've seen this year, it starts to be a little bit of a concern about just his personal life, not even the football side of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, look, it's one of the dangers of playing the position in one of the most violent sports we have. I feel badly for him. You know, the thing I mean, Miami's catching a lot of heat because, you know, they're naturally going to be an investigation. Why didn't they know he had a concussion? You know, I don't know how you know that, right? Like when Nelson Aguilar saw Parker kind of wobbly, he noticed it, so he did something. Now, the spotter obviously didn't. That, to me, that was something that you could. The only way you could have told, to me, you could have felt like Tua had a concussion was, you know, was he not, when you looked him in the eye and you were talking to him in between series, did he seem like he was engaged? Was he kind of communicating? After the game, he said, maybe I miscalled a play on that second interception. There's a red flag right there, right? Because he's such a smart kid. He's not going to make a mistake like that. And then McDaniel on Monday felt like he wasn't engaged. And so he said, you better go see the doctor. And, you know, I think ultimately that this is a challenge. And Tua's got to, you know, I mean, he's going to want to keep playing football. But what are the residual effects of all these concussions? And I don't know if you can say a guy's concussion prone, but certainly when you've had too many in the same year, it weighs on you.
Yeah, it definitely does weigh on them. This is the second time he's been in the protocol, but it's pretty much the third time that we've seen him get his head hit significantly. There was the incident against the Buffalo Bills the first time in that game in Miami. Then he came back and played in that Thursday night game, and that was really when it was really brought to the forefront of our attention here when he entered the concussion protocol after getting hurt against the Bengals. And now it's this time again against the Green Bay Packers. So you really wonder if, like, hey, like, are they going to put him on ice for the rest of the season, because this is just so many head injuries. And we've become smarter as a football society of making sure that we treat these head injuries with the utmost seriousness, because this is the brain, and we all have seen the studies about what happens to some of these guys after they retire. We hope that this doesn't happen to Tua. On the football side of things, though, Michael, now that Teddy Bridgewater is the starter, New England is up to a 3-point favorite, our show sponsor DraftKings. Can Bridgewater pull off a victory out there in Foxborough, or is this a game that New England has a significant advantage now that the Dolphins are down to QB2?
You know, I don't know if New England has a significant advantage against anybody, because the Dolphins, even though they haven't played very good on defense, they dominated the first game defensively. Remember, the Dolphins scored 10 points in the first game. They put 10 points. They scored a touchdown off the interception, off the fumble from Mac Jones, and then another turnover created a field goal. So, you know, this will still be a really hard game, because New England can't move. Can they move the ball? Can they block the front? You know, every game's hard for New England, because they can't generate anything offensively with consistency. They can have a drive here or a play there or two plays here, but they can't do anything consistently. So, to me, I don't think, you know, this isn't, oh, just bet the Patriots, they've got this one down. No, I mean, and look, you know, they'll do a good job against Bridgewater. It's a different kind of game with Bridgewater. Didn't look good when he had a start, and then he got hurt, remember? I'm surprised they went to Bridgewater. I thought they'd go to Thompson, because I know they really like him, but maybe they feel like Bridgewater gives them more experience. But, you know, they can still run the ball. I mean, I think McDaniels hasn't played complimentary football this year, because he should be running the ball to take his defense off the field. So I don't think this is a complete just bet New England game.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game. It's a game that both of these teams need to stay in it for the AFC wildcard race. I believe the Dolphins, as long as they win one of these last two, they should be into the playoffs, but it's definitely one that they need just to try to get some sort of positive momentum after a 4-game losing streak. The other news that we saw in the quarterback carousel is that Carson Wentz, Michael, remember him? Carson Wentz is going to be starting for the Washington Commanders. Commanders are benching Taylor Heinicke after they pulled him late in the game last Saturday, against the San Francisco 49ers. So it'll be Wentz against the Cleveland Browns, as the Commanders are 2.5-point favorites, total of 40. What do you expect here from Wentz? And do you think that Ron Rivera made the right decision in going to Carson Wentz?
I think he had to. I think the longer Heinicke plays, you know, the less effective he was becoming, you know, and I think that became a real problem. I mean, you know, he started 9 games. They're 5-3-1 in those 9 games. You know, he threw 12 touchdown passes, 6 interceptions. And so, you know, I mean, and he was, to me, he was starting to wear down a little bit. You know, he'd taken a lot of hits. This offensive line isn't good. They need to be able to stretch the field a little bit more. Now, that was the problem with Wentz. I mean, Wentz wasn't throwing it down the field. He averaged 6.5 yards per attempt. And so he wasn't really generating, and he was taking way too many sacks. I mean, you know, and just in the six, his sack percentage was 8.5 compared to Heinicke's, which is 6.8. Still not good enough, right? But I think that's ultimately what he felt like. They've got to have to run the Heinicke offense with Wentz, limit what he does, but they've got to be able to make more explosive plays and challenge the field, because I think Heinicke really, his lack of arm and his lack of size after – after nine games, you could start to see it go away. Mm. I learned that with Ty Detmer. I mean, Ty Detmer was a good player when he only had to play 10 games or 8 games. I mean, there's a shelf life. I think that's what Minshew is, too. I don't think Minshew's a true starter. I think he's a really good middle reliever. I think he can go 8 games. I think by the 8th or 9th game, his body, by the limitations, tends to wear down.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point that you brought up there. But if Wentz struggles, Michael, in a game that Washington really needs, otherwise they might let Green Bay come through the back door here and steal that playoff spot. If we see Wentz struggle, let's say he struggles in the first half, do you think Rivera would go back to Heinicke, or is he going to ride it out with Carson Wentz?
I think he's got to win the game. I think you put all your chips in the middle of the table. You got to figure out how to win that game specifically on that day.
It's going to be a fascinating thing to see as Wentz and the Commanders face the Cleveland Browns. Finally, last news and note here from around the league, we saw J.J. Watt announce his retirement. Watt announcing that this past Sunday was his final home game as he will play the final two games of the season and call it a career. And what a career it was for J.J. Watt. 3-time Defensive Player of the Year, 7-time All-Pro, 5-time Pro Bowler, and was the 2017 Walter Payton Man of the Year. I know, Michael, you have your book, Football Done Right, that we're waiting for that to come out, and go ahead and read that. You want to break down all the top 100 players. I'm assuming Watt will be on this list somewhere, but just what do you make of the career that he had, one of the all-time greats on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I mean, he got shot out of a cannon. I mean, his second year, you know, he gets 20 and a half sacks. And then, you know, his third year, he's dominating the game and he becomes defense. You know, he wasn't as good as he was his second year. And then he comes back his fourth year, he gets 20 and a half sacks again. And, you know, he was physically just dominating. And then once the injury started to creep in 16, you know, and then 17, he had injuries. He came back in 18 and really turned it on again. You know, then he got 16 sacks, and then the injury bug kind of hit him a little bit. So, you know, it was those 4 years, actually the 5 years of his 10-year career were as good as any 5 years you're going to have as a career. They really were. It's just unfortunate that he hasn't been able to stay as healthy as he been. You know, last year he only played in 7 games. This year he's been as healthy as he could be, and I'm glad he's kind of going away at age 33 where he still has all his health and he doesn't end the year off on the injury list. So, I mean, completely dominating player, impressive, could play inside, outside. Not one guy could block him, you know, and it was just, to me, the way he took the league by storm was really impressive.
Yeah, just to put that into context, so the four-year span from 2012 to 2015, he won Defensive Player of the Year 3 times in that four-year span, 4 times on the All-Pro list. He got MVP votes in 2014 as a defensive player, 69 sacks, 119 tackles for loss, 41 pass breakups. He was patented for those swats there, and then 15 forced fumbles. I mean, just absolutely off the charts production there from a player who played a lot of it inside, like you mentioned. And he's one of the all-time greats that are on the defensive line. And then I'm sure 5 years from now, he'll be walking right into Canton with a gold jacket on his shoulders there as he calls it a quits. J.J. Watt, hell of a career. We tip our hat to him. All right, Michael, let's take our final break. We will get to Sunday's slate on the other side as we wrap things up here on the GM Shuffle. All right, Michael, before we get out of here, we got to get to Sunday's slate. A lot of good games that have playoff implications. And let's start in Tampa, Florida, where the Buccaneers are hosting the Carolina Panthers. Right now, Tampa, 3-point favorites, total of 40.5. If the Bucs win, they win the division and will put themselves in the playoffs as the 4th seed. If they lose, they open up the door for Carolina and New Orleans to come in and take that title.
Yeah, interesting game. I mean, Carolina losing J.C. Horn, I think, makes them vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the last time they played, Horn didn't play in that game either, but they had Deontay Jackson. Now, he's out too, so their corner situation makes it really challenging. And, you know, it should allow Brady to maybe have some success throwing the football. But they dominated him in the last game. They dominated him on third down. They couldn't get their running game going, the Bucs. And then with P.J. Walker under center, they were able to run the ball, and they made enough plays in the game. They were a 14-point dog at home, and they won 21-3. So a hell of a win for Steve Wilks. I think Steve Wilks has done a great job of getting their identity on offense. I mean, they kicked the shit out. I watched that tape again this morning of them just, I mean, literally. At what point I was wondering when the Lions were going to stop in their nickel and go to their base defenses. They were just getting the ball run down their throats, you know. So, I mean, look, I think it'll be a hell of a game. but I don't think neither team could beat Dallas if they got to go when they play Dallas, if they make the playoffs. But I think it's a great, great situation that Carolina in week 17, after firing Matt Rhule, are playing for something.
Yeah, I thought NBC should have put this as the Sunday night game. What an atmosphere that would have been, Sunday night football.
I think, to me, you know, NBC probably took Ravens Pittsburgh. When you can get that Pittsburgh audience dumped into your lap on a Sunday night, I mean, you're not turning that down. And the game has meaning because Pittsburgh needs to win. Baltimore's trying to, you know, if Cincinnati plays Monday. I think it's really about that audience.
Yeah, Steelers are one of the five favorite franchises, definitely for the league. So they want that big fan base to get those primetime ratings up. Let's talk about this Raiders game, though, Michael. We discussed the Raiders situation with Carr. It's going to be Jarrett Stidham. The Raiders, 9.5-point underdogs at our show sponsor, DraftKings, total 41.5. Can they stay close with the Niners on Sunday?
Yeah, I think it's going to be – I mean, it depends on where the Niners are with this. Are they going to play all their guys? Would you play Nick Bosa this week? I mean, you pretty much got the three seed – you're the three seed, I don't think it's the worst seed to have. You're going to – you know, being three, you're playing either the Giants or, you know, you're playing
maybe a Washington or a Seattle or one of those teams.
Maybe Seattle. I mean, like, if I'm San Francisco, once I get a lead, I think I would be more inclined to not play McCaffrey. Why would I play Bosa? Why would I play Armstead? I need those guys to win the title. I don't need those guys to beat the Raiders. So I think that's more how I would. And look, the one thing about the Raiders, they need to run the ball to be successful. They can't be a drop back pass team. They're not good enough up front. And Stidham's going to be a harder game for him. I mean, it's a challenge. I was shocked the line was only 6 before the news broke on Stidham. I thought that was a little light, which told me maybe the book thinks San Francisco's going to back off a little bit, which I think they might as well.
But would you back off?
I would say this, Femi. Everybody, these games, only bet the games this weekend that you know both teams are going to compete. That means something to both teams. Or maybe it means something to one of the teams and bet them. Mm-hmm. But don't go into a game like I don't know how you predict Arizona, Atlanta. I know Atlanta will play hard because their coach is coming back. I don't know that one. Jacksonville, Houston, you know, Jacksonville, Houston, what are they playing for, right? You know, so is Denver going to play hard? You know, Kansas City. I think you got to really handicap the motivation in the games too.
Yeah, the final 2 weeks of the season is almost like handicapping these bowl games in college football, trying to figure out who the hell is going to show up in these games. But on the San Francisco note, though, I think they're going to give it an honest effort because there's a path for them to get the 2 seed. Now, I know the 2 seed is no longer getting a first-round bye like it traditionally did a couple years ago, but it's still, I think, a big difference between being the 2 and the 3 because if you win that game, you at least guarantee yourself a home game in the divisional round so you can play back-to-back home games versus having to travel on the road for the divisional round. So I think they'll give it an honest effort, especially since Minnesota is playing at the same time. And the Vikings are underdogs, so maybe a little bit of scoreboard watching there at halftime when they go into the locker room and see what's going on in Green Bay. But I think that's good.
And who has the tiebreaker? Who has the
Niners.
Tiebreaker?
The Niners have the tiebreaker. So if the two teams have the same record, the Niners will get the 2 seed. So I think we'll see an honest effort from the Niners in this game against the Raiders. Let's go up to Seattle, where it's pretty much an elimination game for the Jets and the Seahawks. Right now, Mike White is back, baby. The second coming at quarterback. He's a 2-point road favorite.
Wow. I mean,
against
the Mike
the
White love is amazing.
It's
ridiculous, it's unbelievable,
isn't it?
I mean, it's like, give him the goddamn. I mean, what he's like, everybody, I mean, they love him. I mean, Seattle has not been good at home. I mean, but Seattle still can move the football. Mm-hmm. I mean, they say Lockett's going to play in the game. So I think that certainly helps. I'm surprised the Jets came in as the favorite. I mean, look, if anybody knows how to attack this defense of the Jets, it's Seattle. It's it's Pete Carroll's defense, right?
Yep.
You know? And so I got to think that they got to gain some home field advantage from playing up there. They haven't had it. They haven't won up there since I think who did they beat earlier in the year? Oh, they beat the Giants. That's the last
Giants,
time they won at home back. So, you know, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, this is a toss-up game for me. Especially considering that in that loud stadium, I'm not sure how good the Jets' offensive line is. Now, they handled Minnesota really well. They handled Minnesota's crowd noise really well. So if they can run the ball, that'll help Mike. Mike White can't throw it 40 times on the road and expect the Jets to win.
Yeah, but this Mike White love is just, it's gotten out of control, man.
It's unbelievable.
It's out of control. Am I watching the same games? Like he's not a good quarterback.
It just, It goes back to the whole thing. It's like, who do you replace? You know, when you replace somebody who's not good, you look a lot better than you are. It's the fallacy of who did I replace, right? Yeah. You know, if you're a 290 hitter and you replaced a guy who batted 190, you look like a goddamn all-star.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah, just because Zach Wilson is absolutely terrible, people just are craving for Mike White. I'm like, this guy, be careful what you wish for. But he's going to be the starter as a 2-point favorite in Seattle, which is not something I thought I would say about a month ago. Green Bay hosting Minnesota, Michael. This is a really interesting game. The Packers playing for their playoff lives. Vikings have already clinched the division. They're playing for seeding at this point. But the Vikings are 3-point underdogs on the road, total 47.5. This line kind of wants to go to 3.5, but the minute it gets to 3.5, people bet Minnesota. What do you make of this game?
Yeah. I mean, I think it stays down there at the I don't think it's going to – I think it ends up at 3. I really do.
Same.
And I to me, this is I don't trust Green Bay's defense at all. I don't trust them at all. I think Dalvin Cook could have a huge day. I don't trust them at all. So – you know, I mean, I like Green Bay. I'm taking Green Bay in the game because they have so much to play for. The weather, I don't think that one thing about the East Coast this week,
it's warm.
The weather's not going to be a factor in any of these games. I mean, you know, it's going to be 33 degrees there with really very little wind. So I think the over might be in play for both teams, but I would favor Green Bay. I think Rodgers can make some play. I mean, if you can't throw the ball against Minnesota, who are you going to throw the ball against?
That's a good question. Are you breaking out the shorts this weekend when you walk on the beach, Michael?
No. But, you know, we have up on the boardwalk, they have the New Year's Eve. You can walk up on the boardwalk usually and it's freezing. But, you know, I might do that. But why would I leave the house when there's all these football games on? I'm not going anywhere. Where the hell am I going?
Same here. I'm like, Elliot, our producer, was asking me, he said, you doing anything for New Year's Eve? I was like, sitting my ass at home is what I'm doing, man. I got the college football playoff on Saturday, then all the NFL games on Sunday. And speaking of Sunday night football, we talked about it, Steelers and the Ravens, Baltimore 2.5-point favorites, total at 35. This line keeps coming down in favor of Pittsburgh with the indication that I believe it's once again going to be Tyler Huntley behind center for the Ravens.
Oh, it's going to be Huntley. I don't see how it's going to be Lamar. It's going to be Huntley. And, you know, look, the last time they played, Pittsburgh should have won the game. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh was the better team. Now, Trubisky was really good in the game except for 3 passes, and those 3 passes cost him. But they moved the ball really well. I think Pittsburgh's playing better than him right now. I really do.
Yeah.
And I'm going to think this line's going to keep going, I think it could close. If you like Pittsburgh, get them early. I think Pittsburgh's a better team. They're playing better. And they stopped the run the next week against Carolina, and they just, you know, they handled that. If they stop Baltimore's run, I think they'll win the game.
Yeah, I think the Steelers win the game as well. They're plus 125 on the money line.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we had Scott Novak on our national TV game, but
please.
We don't.
Yeah, okay, thank
you. No, we don't. I think they got Scott Novak. I think he is I saw where he was. I was paying attention.
Is he tonight? Hopefully he's not tonight.
No, he's not tonight. I always check to make sure he's not going to ruin my night.
Let's,
Scott Novak, he's going to be in Houston for your watching pleasure.
Oh, okay.
Jacksonville,
right.
Houston.
Yeah, that's
good luck
fine.
With that one.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
consider that before you make your play.
Yeah, I'm not betting that game. I'm not going to watch that game. Or maybe I'll watch it in little snippets here and there. But yeah, no, as long as he's not on one of the important games, I think we're all good. But that does it for this week's edition of the podcast. Can't wait for Monday's edition, Michael. We're going to break down possibly the game of the year between the Bills and the Bengals. That could decide who ends up getting the number one seed out there in the AFC. But, Michael?
You betting it? Are you betting that game?
I don't have a bet on it. I'm going to try to find it, but I think the line is pretty accurate. We know how good these teams are, and it's typically in games when we know how good the teams are, the line's going to be fair. So with Buffalo being a 1-point favorite, nothing for me right now. Maybe something on the total if the weather's not too bad. But I'm not betting the side on that game. I think Buffalo.
What are you all in? What are you all in on this week's games?
I took 3.5 with Minnesota. Let me see what else I have here. I laid 2.5 with New England because I don't see Teddy Bridgewater winning that game. And then I actually took the 7 with New Orleans against Philly. I took the 7. It's down to 5.5 now. I would only take 7 in that game. So if anybody's listening and wants to come ahead and tail, I wouldn't take 5.5. I think 7 was the number that you wanted to get. I think New Orleans' defense is feisty, and then sounds like they're going to get Olave back this week. Maybe Marshawn Lattimore at corner. He finally returns after being questionable for about 6 weeks. So maybe New Orleans has one last stand in them, and they can give Philly a game coming off of that wild game in Dallas. So those are my plays for this week. But Michael, this is the final episode of the pod for the year 2022, buddy. It's been a hell of a year, man. And then we'll have the New Year's resolutions and all that stuff. But a hell of a year for us here on the podcast.
We appreciate everybody. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. And we'll have a good year next year. Thank you.
Yes, we'll have a great year in 2023. So thank you, guys. Happy New Year. Hopefully it's a happy and healthy New Year as you end 2022. But thank you again to our producer, Elliot Bowman, on the ones and twos. As always, thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to VSiN. Thank you to all of the listeners and the viewers. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. We will talk to you guys in 2023. So happy New Year, and we'll see you on Monday.